And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to this defensive breakdown edition. As we are approaching, I have to think, somewhere close to 2 weeks until fall camp begins, where we get to see who is actually back from injury, who is 100% ready to go, and what are we actually going to be able to expect from a Rob Smith Arkansas defense. But joining me, as always, is Mr. Luke Buer. So, Luke, how are things with you tonight?
I'm good. I'm a little disappointed that, you know, you highlighted this as a defense-only podcast, because, quite frankly, we're going to talk to specialists. To specialists, too, and you know that they have a soft place in my heart, a very soft place in my heart. So we're going to cover some of that, too.
Considering Minnesota had a number 5 ranked special teams unit last year, and obviously that contributed a large part to some key victories in that 9-1 season for Minnesota, we have to obviously touch on it. So,
yeah,
defense, special teams, what more could you ask as we start to get things going? So, Luke, let's get into it.
Yeah, okay, so defense. I don't think there's really any question. There is a strength of this defense, right? And that starts with probably linebacker and defensive tackle. And everywhere else, I feel like we kind of got some question marks. Is from an overall perspective, Ryan, is that where you kind of sit?
Yes, absolutely. Again, we'll get into what Rob Smith did at Arkansas in 2016 here in a second. But looking at what Minnesota has coming into this 2017 season, you obviously are highlighted by, I don't know about defensive line and its entire strength as a unit, but specifically defensive tackle, in my mind, is a big strength of what you have. And all Big Ten performers, Stephen Richardson, you have Andrew Stelter, Merrick Jackson, Gary Moore. I'm expecting Royal Silver III to not only join the all-name team for Minnesota, but also probably contribute some downs here for this unit. And you look at the linebacking unit, it's going to be interesting. I'm very interested to see about that rush defensive end spot, because it is primarily just another linebacker spot. It's a hybrid 4-3-3-4 defense, however you want to look at it. Again, it's an interesting unit, because Minnesota has a lot of talent at the linebacker position. Again, Cody Pope gets back from injury. Jonathan Celestine has been a very solid contributor for Minnesota for 3 years. Obviously, Blake Cashman coming back from injury. You have that stellar 2016 linebacker class of Thomas Barber, Carter Coughlin, Kamal Martin, all guys that are going to be thrown into the mix. And then special team standout Jalen Waters is also in there, along with Julian Huff, a pass rusher. So it is a very strong unit in terms of the front two and then the back three or four, however you want to look at it. We will get into defensive end and in the secondary, where I'm a little bit more pessimistic than I am about defensive tackle and linebacker, but there is a lot of talent coming back here. That being said, Minnesota's got to stay healthy. So before we get into like the secondary and defensive end, why don't we take a look at what Rob Smith did at Arkansas last year? And for everything that Luke and I are going to be referencing, if you want to follow along at home, if you're listening to us at a computer, we are on Football Study Hall's advanced statistic profile pages. So when you look at this 2016 Minnesota team to compare, obviously this was a unit that was top 25, top 30, kind of with most metrics you look at. And I know that Football Study Hall here, in terms of their advanced statistic page, has Minnesota rated as the 23rd best defense, adjusted across of FBS football, 128 teams. And that's something we already knew. Obviously, this was a defense that really came to play, and this is one that helped Minnesota win a lot of games last year. You look at how successful Minnesota was against the run in 2016. They were a top 20 team. They were the number 19th ranked rushing defense. And then against the pass, they were actually rated the number 24. So again, you have two top 25, top 20 kind of defenses there, and both against the run and the pass. And the large contributors to that, you know, guys like Stephen Richardson and the pass rushers along that line are going to be back. But the big question mark, and again, we'll get into it here in a little bit, is going to be that secondary. Is you're obviously losing Jalen Myrick, who was drafted by the Jaguars. Demaryius Travis signs with the Patriots. You don't have another NFL guy ready to go and to step up. Where you had when mm-hmm. Brian Body Calhoun left and Eric Murray left, you had Jalen and Demaryius to fall back on. Now, again, I always like to go back and look at that New Year's Day game that Minnesota played against Missouri. And I don't know that you're going to find another Minnesota defense in the 2000s here with more NFL talent on that roster. Because I believe the starting unit, you had Damian Wilson, obviously with the Cowboys, Devondre Campbell, and Jack Lynn. I believe Jack Lynn signed with the Bears as a free agent. Devondre, obviously, is with the Atlanta Falcons. Yep. And then in the secondary, your starting guys are Breann and Eric Murray, so with the Chiefs and the Browns, both starters. And Eric Murray, a kind of a Pro Bowl kind of level special teams guy in his first year. Demaryius Travis, and then it's going to bug me because I'm thinking of the BTN guy who spelled his name wrong. I think it's Antonio Johnson. Oh, that's going to bug me. I'm a terrible Gopher football mind if I get that wrong. No, one of the most productive guys there. And then Jalen Myrick was your nickel guy.
Yeah.
Jalen Myrick couldn't even get on the field. So you don't have that level of secondary production that is kind of proven coming back. So when you compare Minnesota's top 20, top 25 run and pass defenses to what Rob Smith did at Arkansas, it's not very appealing on first glance. I will be the first to admit that. You look at this unit in terms of Rob's 2016 unit for the Arkansas Razorbacks, not the greatest. They were rated as the 64th best defense in the country, obviously. Tracy Clays, Jay Savo, very good football minds. They were in year four or five of the system, how you want to look at things there. And then you look at against the run, that Minnesota goes from 19th last year to Rob Smith had a 112th rated rushing defense. So not the greatest. And then against the pass, they were actually the 79th rated unit. So again, and I know that we've talked about this before, Luke. Again, how much of it is Brent Bielema putting his hand in the cookie jar? How much of it is Rob Smith and the personnel that he had there at Arkansas? I mean, that's something that's going to be a major question mark, something we're going to have to find out here in the first few years as Minnesota tries to install a new scheme. Minnesota tries to figure out what they're going to do with a lot of moving parts coming back here for this Gopher 2017 team. But again, on first glance, Luke, it doesn't exactly look like a very glowing recommendation based on what the advanced stats tell you.
Well, I agree. Looking at it, it doesn't look very bright, and there's obviously, is it tainted, is it not tainted, right? I think the proof will come probably in this year or this next 2 years, whether or not that was Bielema messing things up or not, because we do know that that there had been some success at Arkansas prior. You know, it had kind of fallen off the wagon there. I think it was the 2015 season. They were actually pretty strong. They were kind of a top SEC defense. And then
I think it was 2014. Okay, Rob's first year there. He was up for the Broyles Award. I believe it's called. It's the top assistant coach.
Yeah.
The hard thing to know
with like coaching transitions, right? Sometimes you can inherit really good, really good players, and
exactly,
and then you can fit and you can fit ways to get them to either adjust your scheme or vice versa, and you know you can have some success. And usually, you know, as the years go on, the proof is coming out whether or not it's your ability to recruit and coach or not. So here is where we really just don't know, you know, how much say he had in terms of scheme and even recruiting. So it'll be an interesting couple of years. I mean, obviously Fleck hired him based on the Rutgers years, right? And his experience with him there. So it will be a very interesting time. I mean, we have become kind of, we've been blessed with good defensive performance over the last, you know, five-ish years. And that's not something that in Minnesota we've been able to kind of brag about. And it's a very comfortable position to play good defense, but because it keeps in a lot of ball games, but in some respects, it's not a norm around here.
No, and again, maybe some of our perception of Minnesota's defense is, even though the advanced stats will tell you that it's been a top 30 defense the past 2 years, I mean, maybe we are kind of looking at it through like a maroon and gold kind of glasses, considering the bar wasn't set extremely high.
No, exactly.
Knowing that the defenses and specifically the secondaries that we've seen here in the last 15, 20 years have been just brutal. I mean, now you have four guys drafted into the NFL in the last couple of years. And I guess my point here is, no matter if Jay Sawville and Tracy Clays were here or if Rob Smith was here, looking at the personnel that Minnesota has because of some recruiting misses and because of the sexual assault scandal, and seven guys from the secondary from the 2016 team are no longer here. And again, three of them being expelled. I mean, there's not a lot of things you can do to plan for that, especially if you're PJ taking over a new team. I think this defense was bound to kind of take a step back anyway. Again, I don't think it should be, you know, we should be thinking this is going to be like a middle of the pack kind of a defense, considering there are still a lot of good players here. And it's going to be interesting to see how Rob Smith is able to incorporate them into his scheme. And I know we don't really know a whole lot about what Rob Smith wants to do, because again, he was installing things. They were kind of experimenting with things in the spring. And the same thing can be said about Rob Smith's defense, is the fact that they didn't really get to practice a lot of going on and in terms of
padding. A lot of live stuff. Yeah, there was like no live
stuff. A lot
of
live stuff because of the offensive line. Again, you can't have the defensive line do different stunts and do different blitzes in the front seven, and you can't have them work on timing, which is obviously the most critical part, or one of the most critical parts in terms of trying to figure out your blitz schemes and different things like that, because they had to go against air the entire time. So you don't know how quickly does this defensive tackle cross the guard's face and able to free up the B gap so the guy can come sprinting through. That's going to be something they're going to have to figure out in fall camp. So it's going to be interesting. And another thing is, I know from attending a lot of PJ Fleck camps this summer that every time he introduces Rob Smith, he talks about how Rob Smith wants to be one of the most aggressive blitzing defensive coordinators in Power Five. So again, we didn't really get to see a whole lot of that. And again, not many fans know a whole lot about what Rob Smith does here with his defenses. But if you're going to be blitzing as much as PJ says, you better be able to play some man coverage in your back seven, or specifically your back four or five, which I'm a little leery of. And again, we'll get to that a little bit later. But if Minnesota's going to be aggressive, they certainly have the parts to do it with Carter Coughlin, Teyon Devers, Julian Huff, Blake Cashman among them. There's a lot of pieces, but how Rob Smith puts it together is going to be the thing to note.
Yeah, it's interesting. I hadn't heard that he was known as a blitzing coordinator. I guess maybe I didn't dig deep enough.
And again, maybe with PJ here, he wants him to do some different things. Again, yeah. I don't pretend to know that I watched a bunch of Rob Smith tape and I can tell you different things like that. But yeah, from what Mr. PJ Fleck has been telling people at camps, he is saying he's one of the most aggressive blitzing defensive coordinators, and they want to play a lot of man coverage in the back seven. So if that's the case, you have the pieces up in that front seven, but in that back four or five, we're going to have to address some things. But why don't we start with the defensive end position, Luke?
Yeah, so obviously defensive end. There hasn't really been a player to kind of write home about in a long time. I guess you could maybe go with Theron Cochran, had a moment maybe as a sophomore, but they've kind of struggled to find kind of a breakout player at defensive end. And I think the search is really going to continue, and even really just to be able to identify who's going to be your consistent rotational players outside of, a couple guys.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at defensive end-wise, who do you lose from last year? Hank Ekpe, a guy that never really reached his ceiling under Tracy Clazen. I know the expectations and hopes they have with him. I also believe that he signed a free agent contract with the Bears as well, so I'm not entirely sure if he's still with them or what the case may be. But when looking at just the individual stats, I mean, Hank last year as a senior playing a ton of football, had, I believe, 22 tackles, 7.5 tackles for loss, and 3.5 sacks. So again, the 7.5 tackles for loss is what you want to see, but he also forced a couple of fumbles. But it's not like the bar is exceptionally high, especially when you look at the next defensive end really down there. It's Winston Dilette-Boudere, who had 10 tackles. And after that, I mean, there wasn't a lot of defensive ends to really talk about. And you look at now Minnesota's in 2017, and I mean, that's a big reason why Minnesota's going to be playing with linebackers and in first and second down situations, is because they don't have a lot of defensive ends. You look at the roster, Jerry Gibson has really not done anything so far going into his redshirt junior year. Again, some of that is because he's changing from tight end to defensive end. Now, I don't know that he is I want to see more from Jerry Gibson before I can really say that he's going to help this team. But there's not a lot of people behind him that are going to get in his way to find playing time. Winston Dilette-Boudere is someone that's going to be able to find the field. Teyon Devers again. He's going to be in that rush defensive end. Those are the only three defensive ends they have on the roster, because Boye Mafe, Ezi Owatumo, and Nate Umlor, are true freshmen. So how much do you want to be counting on true freshmen playing the 5 and the 7 technique going against Wisconsin and Iowa in that power running scheme? Again, I don't want to be doing that, but that's just the reality of what Minnesota has on the roster. So, again, they obviously they're going to try to mitigate things by bringing in that rush defensive end and then having Winston play a lot of downs there as long as he's healthy. Because, again, I'm sure that they want a redshirt Boye and Big O, Ezi Owatumo, as much as they can. But the guy for me, if I'm watching that defensive end spot to play right away, is Nate Umlor. Again, someone who's already 6'4", 240, 250 pounds. You're someone that you can throw out there like an Andrew Stelter kind of a situation from 2014, where that was the year that him and Steven had to play right away along with Gary Moore. Mm-hmm. Like if you're going to throw a guy out there, well, at least make sure he's a big body. So how does Minnesota try to mitigate their lack of defensive ends? Well, it's with that rush defensive end spot, and it's with hoping Winston Dilaudy-Boudaire. And yes, I continue to say his name over and over. Because one, it has a ton of fun to say once you know how to pronounce it correctly. And two, he's going to have to play a lot of downs for Minnesota. So defensive end for me is a little bit scary. It is a place that there's not a lot of depth. They only have 6 scholarship guys, and 3 of them are true freshmen. So I'm going to be holding my breath at times, especially if Winston goes down.
All right, let's stay at kind of question marks. Let's actually talk a little bit about that secondary. You know, well documented that they lost a lot of players, both through graduation and then obviously dismissal from school. You know, there aren't a lot of certainties coming back. You've got some guys who have gotten some snaps, but you know, other than maybe Winfield, there's not a lot of proven commodities there, or there are more so inconsistent commodities. So, you know, how many freshmen are realistically going to have to play to get a 2 deep?
All of them. All of them are going to have to play. All of the freshmen, all of the true freshmen. And even safety, I'm fine. I am very comfortable. I don't know. I don't want to attach that to my name. I don't know about very. I'm comfortable with the safety position. You have obviously Antoine Winfield there. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal Big Ten season for him last year. Comes in against Penn State. Gets his first real start, and he played absolutely he was one of Minnesota's best players in the secondary, and now he's probably going to be asked to play down in the box a little bit more. He's going to probably be playing some nickel just like his father was. So, and you put that together with Duke McGee, again, I think that he can provide some things as a redshirt senior. And then
on Duke McGee, over under on 2 targetings this year, what would you take?
Well, first of all, if I was a Vegas man, I would tell you that you should set the line at probably 1.5. So I can't.
Okay,
take the
sorry. That was really amateur of me, but I was trying to rack up really quick in my head how many targetings he had. He will be sitting out the first half of game one this year, if I recall. Let me call it 2.5. I'll give you 2.5. You can take the over or the under.
I'm going to take the under. I think he gets 2. Again, Duke.
Okay.
One of the most physical safeties in the Big Ten, if not college football. But lordy, I hope that Mo Lindquist, Minnesota's defensive backs coach, is teaching that boy to watch where you're putting your head. So between Winfield, McGee, Ayinde, and even Jacob Huff, someone that no one was talked up more this spring than Jacob Huff in terms of he was consistently making plays in the secondary. My biggest thing with Jacob Huff, And knowing that I've seen him in practice for the last couple of years, is he going to be able to tackle? That is my biggest concern with him right now. If you're telling me he can, well, then I feel much more comfortable, and I could probably bump up my safety. My safety thoughts are very comfortable. But, you know, Kunle gets dead legs. I think that we saw that. Duke obviously can't stay on the field with all of his ejection calls. And then you have Winfield and Jacob Huff. So that's where a true freshman, Adam Beck and Kendarian Handy Holly, come in. Again, if you're both of those guys, and hopefully Mr. Beck gets on campus here in a couple weeks, which he's expected to, you can't ask for a better situation when looking at playing time, because Troy Dupree, who was a Kent State transfer that Minnesota had on the roster in the spring, he left to go to a JUCO. So, again, you don't have a lot of bodies ahead of you. If you are a talented player, you are minimally are going to be playing on special teams with a great shot to be able to earn something in that safety place. So corner is where I am extremely reserved about my expectations, because again, there's no Brian Body Calhoun coming back. There's no Eric Murray, Jalen Myrick, or in heaven forbid, if Keontae Hart and Ray Buford were still on this team, I would be changing my tune completely, because I thought Keontae was absolutely coming into his own. I thought Ray showed some good things last year, and you're going in there with Keontae and Ray along with Chanel and Coney. Well, Mr. Keontae Hart and Ray Buford have been expelled. They're no longer on the team. Coney Durr is coming off ACL surgery.
He played really well in that Washington State.
He played well for his first ever collegiate action, and what Sabel asked him to do, he played well.
Yeah.
Now,
I'm not saying that I have an incredibly high bar for him yet, but I'm just saying, like, in that tough spot, you know, given a month to prepare, he played really well.
Yeah, and the hope is that he's going to be able to come back for fall camp and be able to participate early in the non-conference. But in that same respect, his knee may be 100%, but he's going to be still trying to get back to game speed. He's going to be still trying to make – again, you can't – you know, he may say that he feels 100%. He's not thinking about that knee in the first game. But, it's human nature to do so. Again, last time you were on the field in a game situation, your knee blew. I mean, you're going to be thinking about it in the back of your mind, even if you don't make it public. So, I mean, how does Coney Durr come back? Is Alonzo Creighton going to take a giant step forward here as a redshirt sophomore? Keiondre Thomas had a lot of high expectations from Jay Sobel. He is probably an assumed starter right now, but that's only because the only two guys that you really had healthy during the spring were Chanel and Keiondre. Coney being out, Creighton playing some safety and doing some things at corner. Minnesota only has 5 scholarship cornerbacks, folks. Again, you lost so many. You lost 4 defensive backs to graduation, and you only have one coming in, and Justice Harris from Georgia, who is absolutely going to have to be playing right away just because of out of necessity and depth. So I am very I'm nervous. Because, again, say Chanel goes down because he missed time in the spring with an injury. Keiondre missed time in the spring with an injury. Folks, we could be playing with walk-on freshman cornerbacks if things don't really go right. And, again, the response to that would be, well, why aren't you including Ray Estes, the supposed quarterback coming in from St. Louis, Demetrius Douglas, that we at Scout had rated as higher as a defensive back than a wide receiver. He's going to get a shot at wide receiver. So again, those two may come into play there, but this cornerback depth chart, again, I'm very nervous. I'm just knowing that you don't have a bona fide NFL guy coming back, and you have question marks with Chanel being exposed at times, specifically in that Penn State game stretch. Coney only has a first half anyway of collegiate experience. Alonzo Creighton has very limited experience, and then everybody else has no experience. So it's going to be young, and it's going to be, how does Mo Lindquist earn that paycheck? Cause he's going to have his hands full.
Yeah. All right.
Especially because you and I just talked about it. If Rob Smith wants to be an aggressively blitzing team,
right?
Well, you're going to have to be playing a lot of man coverage everywhere else. And man, oh man, I hope there's a lot of attention being paid to that this summer.
Yeah, but that's, in some ways, that's really not new, right? At least from being a Gopher fan. Granted, the experience level was higher, but I mean, we're used to seeing guys put on islands quite often. So, it should be a really interesting go, isn't it? Middle Tennessee State opponent.
Oh, that is the non-conference opponent where, yeah. I am. Again, for people who haven't been on Gopher Illustrated reading my 2017 season previews, when we looked at Middle Tennessee State, they have the most potent wide receiver quarterback connection that Minnesota really faces during their first 8 weeks. And it might be their entire season in terms of a passing game. They have a fantastic wide receiver by the name, I believe his name is Richie James, and that quarterback coming back, who is Middle Tennessee State's head coach's son. But he has made a name for himself. I mean, I believe his touchdown to interception ratio last year was like 35-4. This is a team that is going to give this Gopher secondary fits if they're not careful. I expect a lot of zone. Keep it underneath. Don't get beat deep. So, again, cornerback and defensive end, and you know, we're going to have to see, because there's a lot of talented linebackers, and it's going to be how do you fit them all onto the field.
Right. Okay, so right now, if you had to pick, who do you feel like is the stronger position group of the two kind of known strong position groups, linebacker or defensive tackle?
Oh, I'd say defensive tackle, just because you have so many more you have five upperclassmen scholarship sure. players there. And again, for a position like the like offensive defensive line is at the collegiate level, I mean, that means something, because instead of 19-year-olds, you're going against 21, 22, and sometimes 23-year-olds. Merrick Jackson, Stephen Richardson, Andrew Stout, they're all big-time guys. So I feel better there. But in that same respect, I don't want to shortchange this linebacking crew and what Mike Sherrills has really assembled here. Because, again, these are all guys, for the most part, that he's recruited outside of Trenton Guthrie, who I do expect to redshirt. So, how does Cody Pope come back? And if he does come back, is he the assumed Mike linebacker over Thomas Barber? I'd have to think Jonathan Celestine is assumed as a starter there. But that other outside linebacker spot is interesting to me, especially with the news that Blake Cashman is probably going to be moving to that rush DN spot. Does that mean Julian Huff is also going to move there? Because if so, does that mean Carter Coughlin is moving back to compete with Kamal Martin there? A lot of things in the works there. So, and I don't want to shortchange Jalen Waters either, going into his redshirt sophomore year. Again, a very good player for Minnesota on special teams, along with Blake Cashman. So there's a lot of mystery involved with this defense. And the bad thing about it, I guess, is we don't get to see the reveal when they pull up the curtain until that Buffalo game in late August.
Yeah. Defensive tackle wise, you know, you got four older guys, but after that, it's the cupboard's basically bare, right? That's one of like the biggest concerns that PJ seemingly has highlighted in the media over and over again.
Yes. 2017 defensive tackles is a strength for the Gopher defense. 2018 defensive tackles, not so much. It's going to be young. It's going to be very young. So, I mean, that's not something, I don't know, that we have to really address here right now, but that should be in the back of your mind, is while it's a strength of 2017, 2018 defensive tackles are going to be looking a little bit different.
Like, who legitimately is even going to be on the roster? You got Gary Moore?
Well, maybe Gary Moore. That'll be an interesting one to watch, because he's going to be a redshirt junior this season, which means he's going to get his diploma here. He'd be getting his diploma here in the spring. So he has the option to, maybe he takes a graduate transfer and goes down to UAB, a lot closer to home. And I know he's got, I believe, a young son or daughter down there that, so he could go back closer to home. And if he leaves, you also have Merrick, Steven, and Andrew also leaving. You'd have four defensive tackles gone. You only have Royal Silver, who's going to be going into his senior year. And then you have presumably three guys you just redshirted in Noah Hickox, Malcolm Robinson, and Austin Schrick. Or Shirk, I'm going to figure out how to pronounce that by the time he sees the field. So, again, you have three redshirt freshmen plus probably two or three true freshmen competing with Royal Silver. You're going to be young.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
We're going to have to see how it plays out. But, again, there's a lot of question marks I still have about this Gopher defense. And no matter who is the coach, knowing what happened or what the outcome was of the sexual assault deal, I don't know that really anybody could do too much about it.
Okay, sure. Oh, defense feels like just a big kind of giant question mark to me. Even though we have position groups that are very strong, I know that we have question marks on offense. I'm still like, defense just worries me because of that secondary. I don't know. It just feels like an even bigger question mark.
And I'm sure people are listening to us singing, "Go drink a cup of maroon and gold Kool-Aid," but again, I mean, what do you have to point to at corner that is leaving you feeling better about it than when you started listening to this podcast, knowing that Chanel is the only one there who has legitimate game experience?
Right.
Because again, Coney is a half. Alonzo Creighton has like maybe a game. Keandre hasn't played. Justice hasn't played. You're going to take your lumps as a young defensive back. All of the now guys in the NFL did. And Eric Murray, Brian, Jalen, they all took their lumps early on, and Jay Sava was able to mix them in specific packages because Minnesota had depth there. They don't have depth at corner anymore. They have a little bit of depth at safety there. But again, it is what it is because you have seven scholarship defensive backs gone from 2016. So, I mean, they're addressing that in this 2018 recruiting class, and I think they're doing quite well with it. But that doesn't help you in 2017. And that's where how does Rob Smith and Mo Lindquist, how do they mask that lack of secondary experience in that front seven? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's we're going to have to find out in that non-conference as we get into the season.
Yeah, you either got to get good pressure on that quarterback or, I don't know, just keep stuff in front and make tackles. So it'll be interesting. But let's transition, talk a little bit about the specialists. And, you know, actually specialists can mask some of your deficiencies offensively and defensively, you know, playing that field position game. And last season, the Gophers were exceptionally good, especially in the kicking games, not necessarily the receiving games, but definitely in the kicking games. You know, Ryan Santoso, a pretty strong punter, a little bit shaky at first, but he found a pretty consistent rhythm. And then you've got, you know, place kicking wise, you really can't get much better when you have the Big Ten kicker of the year.
No, you can't. Emmett Carpenter. We've talked about him before. And we're going to talk about him again. He's just someone that came in and I really wasn't expecting him to shine on the bright light as much as he did. And he shined. I mean, you look at what he did last season, 22 of 24, 91% in terms of converting his field goals, and 43 of 44 as a PAT guy, made a lot of clutch kicks for Minnesota in big time spots. So this Minnesota special teams unit, we talked about it. They're a top five unit in terms of all FBS teams last year overall as a unit. Obviously, a lot of that is what Edmund Carpenter was able to do. And Ryan Santoso, I don't know if I'd say he was very good. I think he was all right. Just because,
that's fair.
I mean, he didn't find a comfortable place in terms of you didn't know what to expect from kick to kick.
Yeah, and again, it lacked consistency. Like he would absolutely bomb a couple, and you know, but yeah, I agree. It lacks consistency.
And so that's the biggest thing for him is can he find consistency? Because he does have an NFL punter leg, but he doesn't have the NFL punter consistency, and that may be more of the thing that folks may be looking for in terms of at that NFL punting level. So if Santoso can find consistency, I'd feel a lot better.
Yeah.
And that's the other thing is who's going to be the kickoff guy too. You look at what Emmett Carpenter did last year, he took 76 kickoffs. Now I wouldn't be surprised if Grant Rierse is the kickoff guy. Ryan Santoso is the punter and Emmett Carpenter is the place kicker. So you get to save someone's leg. Cause again, maybe Emmett's leg gets worn down in that bottom or the last six games of the season, cause he's doing so many other things. Again, he's someone that between PATs and field goals last season, if my University of Minnesota education is correct, he had 68 attempts there plus 76 kickoffs. I mean, you're somewhere around 140 times he had to use that leg. Now, if you can cut that in half and just have him focus on place kicking, maybe when it's that 48 to 53 yard kick in November against Nebraska, against Wisconsin, he has the leg to do it. So we'll have to see how they address the kickoff game as well. And how much is that touchback percentage going to improve?
Yeah.
Because under Tracy Clay's last year, half the time it was kick it to the goal line. And we have such a good coverage unit with Blake Cashman, Kamal Martin, and Jalen Waters. We think we can pin them inside the 25 and gain field position. How much is that going to be playing into effect? Because when you look at 2016 Western Michigan, as my computer here doesn't cooperate.
Well, I was going to say, actually, in addition to that, like he kicked so many of those out of bounds. Like he wasn't particularly,
yes,
he was not particularly good at that coffin corner kick.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I believe he had seven or eight out of bounds. And when you look at, actually, so let's look at how many did he had. He had eight out of bounds last year. And you look at what Minnesota's special teams coordinator, Rob Wenger, again, someone who literally lives, breathes, and eats and dies special teams. They had a 53% touchback percentage at Western Michigan last year. So, again, just about the same as Minnesota. We're going to have to see how that plays out because, again, I'm interested to see if they want to save Emmett or Ryan's leg. Knowing that they have Grant Rierse, obviously the East Ridge specialist there,
sure,
coming in. I mean, you can redshirt him. I mean, again, that's a very common practice, but maybe you just have him focus on kickoffs as well. So
sure.
Let's look at returners, Luke.
I mean, do we have any returners? I mean, they haven't really shown up the last couple of years.
That's mean. I mean, when you look at the punt return game, you mean like, yeesh.
It's been so bad.
I'm looking at the punt returners.
Like, when a punt goes up, I'm mostly just worried if they're going to catch it.
And Minnesota had, let's see.
I'm just glad that Drew Olatarski is not going to be trying to catch punts anymore.
Of the 20 returns Minnesota had last year, there were 3 fumbles of the 20. That's not particularly gives you a lot of
that's 15%. Reason
for, yes, that's not, it's not great. And then you look at kick return. I mean, Minnesota did have some success there when they put Keontae and Rodney back there instead of Jalen Myrick.
Yeah, I mean,
Rodney averaged 33 yards a return.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing. I don't know if I want my starting running back to be taking kickoffs.
I hear you. So again, that's and I know from talking with people inside the program about that. I posed the question to someone in the know, but who's going to be returning? And his response back to me was, your guess is as good as mine. And I don't know. It's going to be interesting. Maybe it's Philip Howard. Maybe it's Drew Himalewski. Maybe it is going to have to be Rodney and Shannon. We'll have to see. Again, I'm not really sure how that's going to play out because, again, do you want to be putting Rodney and Shannon back there and upping your risk for injury, knowing how vital they are to their offense in 2017, or do you want to try out some new guys and maybe not have as much success? So I don't know, my man. It's going to be interesting to see how things play out on that special team side of things as well.
All right, let's get this negative Nancy fest over with. I've been so so negative. Oh, I don't know. I am skeptical.
Again, I am
skeptical. So okay, let's just talk really quick. You know, from a field position point of view, obviously, you know, Jerry Kill and Tracy Clays were all about field position, such to the point that they were risk averse enough to run the ball and not take a big sack to try and essentially gain field position as they kick back because they relied so much on their defense. Do you think that that's a similar approach? I don't know if you have any insight into that, but that's something I'm curious about. I was a little bit sick of the risk averseness from time to time to play field position.
Well, I don't think they have the luxury to do so. Again, I thought knowing that, I know because anything can really happen in college football. It's 6 weeks from, I believe it's 47, 48 days now, or it might be less than that. Actually, I think it's like 43, 44. So a lot of things are going to change in the next 43 days or so until Minnesota kicks off. But in my opinion, knowing the personnel Minnesota has coming back on defense, I don't think you have the luxury of relying upon them, relying upon a proven back seven and a lot of pass rushers up front. I mean, you do have the pass rushers, but you don't have the secondary to rely on. So maybe you do get them into third and seven, and the secondary is not able to cut down in terms of getting off the field on third down. Well, that means the offense is going to have to score some more points. And I do expect the offense to take a step forward, but I shouldn't say I expect the defense to take a step back, even though it sounds like the negative Nancy fest is, or Johnny Raincloud is through the roof here. But again, I just don't expect it to be a top 25, top 30 unit. I think it's going to be between 50 and 60 if things go well, because Minnesota has a lot of different moving parts. So If I'm looking at this 2017 team now, I think it's going to be an offense that's probably going to have to carry the defense at times. And that should be a little bit scary for me to say, considering Minnesota's breaking in a brand new offense, a brand new offensive coordinator, a brand new quarterback, very little things proven at the wide receiver position, and an offensive line that needs to come together still with all the injuries they had. But again, you look across college football, specifically in the Big Ten, I think there's like 7 or 8 new Big Ten starting quarterbacks. So everybody's going to be going through a lot of the same thing. But this defensive unit, obviously highlighted by the strengths of their linebackers and their defensive tackles, they're going to have some guys step up at defensive end in the secondary. But if they're able to do so, I mean, you're still going to be around that 6, 7, 8 win mark.
It will be interesting to watch. It will be interesting to watch.
It will be indeed. So anything else you want to talk about tonight? I don't think there's anything really else before we preview next week. Anything else in your mind?
No, not in particular. One thing that we didn't talk about was like takeaways, but that is so hard to predict. I don't think that we can predict anything there. It's not worth it. So just
again, that's again another reason why Minnesota was so successful last year is we talked about that plus minus. Western Michigan, I believe, had the number one in the country
right
last year, but again, that was under a different defensive coordinator. Same offensive coordinator who values the ball, but how does that defensive coordinator coming into that same respect? So again, the head coach matters in it too. PJ has that philosophy, and we're going to have to see how it plays out. But looking forward to next week, next week's episode is going to be looking at some fall camp storylines, and we're also going to be talking some recruiting because on the 29th, it's going to be a very, very important day. There is Minnesota's last camp of the year, and they're also going to be having their Hyper Hangout, the HYPRR, the acronym that Coach Fleck has. I think I pronounced it correctly. It's their end of the summer barbecue, and they're going to have a lot of key targets up here. That list is still being talked about and finalized. I know I posted the latest I've heard after I hung up with a source this afternoon on Gopher Illustrated. So I have a visitor list there pinned. You can see who's looking at coming, who is potentially be projected to come. You can check that all out there as well. So ball camp storylines and some Cruton next week before we actually get to talk some football the week after, Luke. So we're in the 40s. Football is coming, and it's going to be here pretty quick.
All right. Well, thank you all for listening. If you like the podcast, rate it on iTunes, Stitcher, or whatever kind of podcasting aggregating application that you use. Also, check out Ryan's website. Again, thanks for listening. Go Gophers.